Welcome to the
Idiots
Explaining
Entertainment
Extravaganza, only on GamingUncensored.com. D4.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to episode 9 of E4 2025. I'm Tommy. Jamie sitting over there. How you doing, man?
I am happy to be here. I'm very excited to be here. I've been waiting to get here for several days. Yeah. I'm having so much fun with this Gamescom stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on. We got a big show today. We think this is maybe possibly the last E4 show, but I'm not banking on it because stuff just keeps coming. So
this is true. So as of right now, this is the anticipated last E4 of 2025. But it's good to do a whole bunch of them. The excuse to do a whole bunch of them. And Gamescom is now filled out from essentially June through August of summer game time, you know, whatever that is now. So what used to be condensed into like 4 days of E3 is now spread out over 3 months.
Yeah.
But it's still awfully fun. So yeah,
here it's we are. It's a blast.
So with that said, we are going to kind of finish up our conversation about Gamescom, talk about other games that we saw that weren't part of Opening Night Live that we saw through the Future Game Show. Yeah, there's a ton, some of which we'd seen before, some of which we had never seen, just cool stuff. And so we've got a bunch. Future Game Show had a great showcase, so we can talk about that a little bit. There was lots of coverage. They did awards, like the whole thing. It was fun. Like Gamescom, super legit. So super cool. So we've got a lot of games to talk about. And we'll get to that in just a second. We've got one other topic we'll get into of a little bit of newsiness. There's not been a ton of news happening aside from Gamescom. Gamescom is kind of a big enough deal in and of itself to drive the news. But there's been a little bit of other stuff happening. So we'll get into that. Before all that, though, big thanks to Patreon supporters, Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, Luik, Logan, Liz, Jordan, Gio, and Derek. Thank each and every one of you for your support. We appreciate it a ton. You help us play games and pay for the show, and those are very important things to us. And so that's a big deal. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, you can do that. Go by gaminguncensored.com, click that become a patron link there near the top of the page. Give us some money. We'll take it. We'd love it.
We absolutely will take it. If there's somebody out there that wants to give us, about $40,000, we can totally take that.
Whatever you've got that you want to take our way, we are game. We're not going to say no to anybody at this point. So that said, we talked to each other relatively recently. That's one thing we often catch up here. I don't know that we need to catch up. I think we can just dive in.
I think we have a lot to talk about, which I'm really excited about. It's nice to talk to each other on a regular basis, which we don't often get to do. So that makes this show just slightly more tighter than usual.
Yes, for sure. So that said, we'll just jump right in. As I mentioned, we had a little bit of news I wanted to bring up because it kind of leads into a bigger topic as well. And this is price increases of consoles, which is weird because that's not how it usually happens. So the one that just happened within about a week is the PlayStation 5 prices have gone up. The PlayStation 5, the standard edition with the disc drive, is now $550, so a $50 increase there. The PlayStation 5 digital only version is $500, and the PlayStation 5 Pro is a hefty $750 for the PS5 Pro.
Can we just mention that a 5070 Ti is cheaper than a PS5 Pro at this point?
That's crazy, man. That price just boggles my mind. What was the? I'm looking it up right now. I'm trying to remember what the price was on the release date. If it was $700 or if it was $650, it was $700. So it's only a $50 increase, kind of across all three of those, which still stings, but $700 for the PS5 Pro was ridiculous.
And we'll get into this. This discussion is happening because I saw one of the IGN podcasts for day 4 or 5 of the Gamescom. They did a bunch of live podcasts from the Gamescom set there, and they were talking about this, and they made some points that I didn't really think about, and so I'm really excited to get into that. For the first time in a while, Tommy and I are going to have an argument.
So we get to do that. So the pretty obvious rationale given for this, and I'll mention that the Switch, not the Switch 2, but the original Switch, just saw a price increase as well. I don't remember exactly what that was, but that was within like the past month. And in both of those situations, the culprit from the company's point of view is the fact that they're having to pay tariffs on these, or somebody's having to pay tariffs on these. We'll get to that part of it in a little bit. But tariffs are being levied on these pieces of hardware, which has to be compensated somewhere. And so they're saying they are passing that price. I mean, they're not saying it this way, but what they are doing is saying we need to increase the price to make it justifiable. What they are doing is passing on that that price to the consumer.
Paul.
Go ahead, man. I want to hear your side of this because we already know we disagree on this. So I want to hear what you got to say.
And I appreciate my guy, Damon Hatfield, for pointing this out. Like, let's start with the PlayStation 5. I have an issue with this because the PlayStation 5, and he pointed this out. I had not done the math. So all props to Damon Hatfield over at IGN for bringing this up. It's very simple. The PlayStation is 5 years old. Five!
Yeah.
Okay? You can't raise the price on a five-year-old console. I get, I'm kind of okay with the price of the PlayStation 5 Pro. Because that's the top tier, and that's the all the bells and whistles, and the It's the clearly the premium quote unquote version of the PlayStation. And so it's going to cost more. It always has. It's going to continue to cost more. I mean, it is what it is. $750 is absurd. It's more than we paid for the PlayStation 3 after tax. So like it's insane. But like you can't. Well, you can,
cause right?
but like raising the price on a five-year-old console for whatever the reason is nuts, and it goes back to the conversation that we've had over the last several shows. In that the point, and I'm probably going to like come over to your side by the end of this because. The point of all of this for these companies is to make money. Let's not get it twisted. It's not about us, the gamer. It's not about making us happy. It's not about providing us entertainment. It's about them making money, period. And if we happen to be happy in the process, so be it. But that's the point. And that I think that's where all of this is coming from. And I sort of have a problem because there's no console maker anywhere ever that has made money on hardware. They just don't. It's not a thing that happens.
Not much. Marginal amounts.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
We always talk about at launch, hardware is a net loss. They make their money back other ways. By the time you get through the console cycle, theoretically, technology has adjusted, which is a big deal with this. Like you said, 5 years after technology has adjusted such that it is cheaper to produce the consoles than when they launch, which is also why we usually see a price decrease.
Right. And that's what
David said. Is that it is so bizarre.
Yeah,
across the board now, because like I said, Nintendo did it too, not with the Switch 2, because they want to get those into homes.
Right.
We may see a price increase on that eventually, but in this launch window, they're going to keep that price as artificially low as they can, because that install base is incredibly important and they're killing it. Like Switch 2 doing just fine, like selling tons of copies. Like,
and let me just say this before you kill me, because I know you well enough to know that I think where you're going. Look, they're allowed to make whatever money they want to make. That's capitalism, as we've said over the last like three shows. But there's something to be said for common sense. Sony raising the price on a five-year-old console for whatever reason. Like, you can blame tariffs, you can blame whatever. Whatever the reason is absurd. Because Sony as a whole, Sony as a company, same applies to Microsoft, and less so to Nintendo, although I would even argue that Nintendo's fine. Nintendo's made so much money over the last 15 years. I'm not worried about them. These companies can't afford to eat $50. Like, they can. They can. And that's what we've discussed over the last three shows about all of these, you know, job, all these firings and closures and all that. They can. They just don't want to. And because they're in a space where what they are selling is desirable and they know we'll pay it, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't completely disagree with all of that. My disagreement comes in the very specific externality of the tariffs, right? Like, this is a specific thing that has happened that is not market forces, that is not, you know, a chip shortage. Everybody remembers that happened, right? Yeah. Like, that wasn't that long ago.
Yep.
By the way, Microsoft, I thought this was true. I just went back and checked. Microsoft raised the price of their consoles like 4 months ago, right? So this is all three of them now.
Right.
All three major manufacturers have raised the price of their previous or current gen console. Again, Nintendo Switch 2 excluded from that for the time being. But the others have. And much because all of the manufacturing of this happens not in the United States. And so for the United States audience, all of this stuff is getting imported, which makes it subject to these tariffs. And these tariffs are varying degrees and change all the time. And we can get into whatever that, you know, uncertainty around that is. But it is that there is a definable externality cost that these companies are now responsible for that they weren't going to be responsible for otherwise, right? Like, this has come up no fault of their own, no fault of their process, no fault of whatever. Like, these are across the board tariffs. This isn't Microsoft is being tariffed because of this or whatever it is. Like, these are across the board tariffs that are happening. And I do not disagree at all, because I'm not the one to sit here and defend corporatism for the sake of corporatism, for the sake of just chasing profit. But you're right. That's what they're in business for. That's the whole thing, is these companies exist to make money. And they do that by providing a product that we enjoy. And hopefully that is a mutually beneficial relationship. But they are not in the business to make us happy. They are in the business to make money. They
do
that hopefully by making us happy. But if they don't, then other things happen. And market forces can take care of that and everything else. We can talk about that. So all that said, they have a fiduciary responsibility, to use a big term that comes up all the time recently because of all this stuff, to maintain whatever like projected revenue numbers and everything else that they had laid out a year ago, whatever it is, or else shareholders have, you know, rights to sue or oust people or whatever it is. Like, there's a bunch that goes into that. That throwing on an added cost, again, without a whole lot of prep time, we've known it was coming for months, but not for years, you know, and these are long-term right. planning projections we're talking about here, puts it in a place where there is a tariff, which, let's be clear, what a tariff is, a tax. Yeah. Who pays that tax is debatable, right? We could ask the question about who pays that tax. Is it the exporter? Is it the importer? Is it the consumer? Well, the tax is levied to the importer. The person that is receiving whatever that is the one that pays that. So the rationale is that's an added cost before you can sell. And so the way you make up for that added cost, like you would for any other added cost, is you build that into the price of the product. And that's what we're seeing, is that these are getting built into the price of the product. Would I rather they eat the cost? Would I rather it go somewhere else? Of course I would, because we always want to pay less. But like, that is, it's not that they're arbitrarily raising the price to go more profits. They are raising the price because they have a new cost that wasn't there before, right?
Right.
As a legit reason to raise the cost of the product, even though I don't like it. I don't like it more because I think the policy is bad and across the board, because it's going to raise prices on all kinds of stuff. Like, video games are obviously what we talk about here, but everything we're buying is going to have increased price because of this stuff, because this is how it works. There is an increased cost to doing business. There is a fiduciary responsibility of these companies to provide what they said they were going to provide. The way they do that is by increasing costs for the consumer. Like, that's capitalism.
Yeah,
there's things about capitalism I don't love. That's sure one of them, you know. But like,
we've been talking about it for a month, and I don't disagree with anything you just said. Here's my pushback on that. Like, let's talk about Grand Theft Auto 6 for a minute.
Yeah,
we've been talking about what the price is going to be. Grand Theft Auto 6 for months, and there's several people out there that have said, I don't know what's going to happen, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I've heard from several people that have said Rockstar would like to be able to charge $100 for Grand Theft Auto 6, right?
Sure.
That's what they would like to be able to charge. And I, again, nothing that you said about tariffs or what's going on right now is incorrect. However, there are, especially in this business and in any other business that sells tangible goods, you only have a business as long as you have customers, right?
Sure.
And so, especially when we're talking about these three companies that have made so much money on what we're willing to buy, I think at some point you need to be conscious of the fact that, hey, we're here because our consumer base put us here. Let's cut them a little bit of a break. Now, what we are talking about, and I'm saying this to balance this out a little bit. What we are talking about is an entertainment product. It is a premium product that nobody needs.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's not a need. You and I having video games to play is not required to function in life.
Correct.
Right? So that's the side of it that Dave Ramsey or anybody else would say, like, this is not a necessity. So it costs what it costs, and it is what it is. And I'm not particularly complaining about the price of this stuff, because at this point we've seen stuff go up. We've seen stuff change. We went from $50 games to $60 games to now $70 games, and we're trying to get to $80 games. Mario is Mario Kart is $80. And Damon, during this same podcast, was like, look, man, I love Mario Kart. Mario Kart, great. I play it with my wife, my kids. But after having it for several months, it ain't worth $80. Like, it's good. It's great. I love it. It's not worth $80. Right?
Right.
And so my thing is like, I feel like at some point you have to do something for your customer base. And This is one of those times as a business where you say, we're here for you guys. And that is a completely optional. That's a completely optional thing that every company can choose whether or not to do. And I just wish they would. Doesn't mean they have to or it's required.
Right.
I just wish they would.
It's pretty pie in the sky to think that they would. Yeah. Like, it's a nice thought. I do want to make one distinction. The conversation about GTA 6's price point isn't related to the tariff cost, right?
Because
it's not
right. a tariff yeah.
issue with GTA 6 because it's all digital distribution. I mean,
the point that I totally missed was everybody's looking for a way to make more money off
of course.
This stuff because development costs and all that's going up and staffs and whatever.
And as we've talked about before, inflation is a thing. Like, and this is, I get it. And I don't love paying $80 for games either. I didn't love paying $70 for games. I didn't love paying $60 on and on. When we were kids, when we were, you know, high school age, games were like $40, right? $40 from the late 90s is equivalent to about $80 today in inflation adjusted numbers. Like, prices go up and we complain about it, and that's always true. And I don't, again, push back where there's places where like games aren't valuable for that much or whatever. Like, I the guy from IGN saying he doesn't think Mario Kart's worth $80. Cool. Totally get that. Like, I understand that rationale. Like, it makes total sense. At the same time, to take my family out to eat, like, we spend $80 to go out to eat at this point, you know, like, there's four of us, like, things just cost more because for multiple reasons. I don't want to say just for one simple reason. There's lots of reasons things cost more, but like, that's just a progression of how things go. Games are going to always be more expensive than they were because buying power is always going to change. The power of the dollar is going to be less and on and on, right? There's a million reasons that that's going to happen. We can say what is reasonable, what is not reasonable. We can say games have always been overpriced or whatever it is. Like, those are all rational things, but there is like the fact that we're seeing price increases and we're also seeing mass layoffs and we're also seeing, you know, like other indicators that companies are struggling for different reasons. And again, it's so complex and there's so many other elements to it, but it all just like, there is a corporate greed aspect to this that certainly exists. And there's also a lot of other factors that are going to happen no matter what, even if Sony said we're going to eat the price of the tariffs because we want to do y'all a solid, which, to be clear, they're like, I've seen like car commercials, right? It is a branding, it's a marketing thing. I'm not giving them a ton of credit for like doing great consumer work here, but like, I've seen car commercials that are like, buy a new car, no tariff costs on this yet, you know, kind of thing, like trying to build that up as a reason to go buy a car because whatever, you know, like, we're eating the cost of that, we're doing you a solid by doing that, which is perfectly fine, you know, if that's how you're building brand loyalty and anything else. But like, the fact that these console prices hadn't already gone down is crazy. Yeah. Like, before we get to the point right now that they're going up,
I think
the fact that we just never got a price drop across.
I think that's what bothers me the most out of all of this.
And that's kind of a different conversation, but that's also a really interesting conversation.
We're talking about a 5-year-old console. I don't know how old the Switch is. Probably about 5 years.
Switch is older than that because it came out in 2017. So
you can't. I think you're right. That's a completely different conversation. You cannot tell me that we have these new costs and we know it's a 5-year-old console. and we love you guys, but we're sorry. Here's the thing. If PS6 was announced that it was coming out tomorrow, at this point, I would not be surprised at any price.
Yeah.
Like you bought parts for a PC. You have parts sitting in your house for a PC.
Right back there.
which I budgeted money for. And of course, the biggest part of that was the video card. And the TI series came out and prices got cheaper because there's new cards and whatnot. And so the money that I put out for those parts you have sitting in your house is essentially the same price that I paid for my last computer and roughly the computer before that. And like, my point is I expected it to cost more than it did, but roughly, basically, it's the same price that it has been for the last two PCs. And that's wonderful. Like that's part of the reason that you build a PC. And with that being the case, I just don't feel like there's any justification for raising a price on a 5-year-old console. You can do whatever you want for the new console. Like, I can bitch and moan about Grand Theft Auto 6 and whatever the price is. But really, honestly, if we're being real serious about it, it's whatever. It's a new product.
Yeah.
Like I expect that for new products. You don't do that for 5-year-old products.
And I would agree with you on that point if it wasn't for a very specific thing we can point to. That's just a tax. Like, it's just a tax.
Okay,
it's being added to the product.
I agree. One thought, you are correct. I'm not arguing that. But I think this is a nice bit of cover for them to say, oh, we wanted to do this for a while. Now we got this excuse because of this big orange guy over here. Like, it's too convenient. I hear what you're saying. You're 1,000% right. I think this was something that they were looking to do, and I think this is an easy scapegoat.
I would bet you money, and how we would ever get True Serum to find this out. But I would guess that execs at Sony, at Microsoft, at Nintendo would much rather sell the console at the cost that they were selling it at without the tariffs than at the new cost with the tariffs. I don't think they're thrilled about these price increases because they know it's going to drive their sales numbers down. It looks really bad to increase your prices, right? Like,
yeah.
Why? Especially when historical precedence is that console prices come down, not go up, especially with no new features. If this is like, okay, we're putting out the PS5 Pro and it's $750 because it's the PS5 Pro, ta-da, and that was a new product that they were putting out right now.
No problem.
You can wrap your head around it a little bit. PS5 Pro at $750 still is insane to me, but that's a different conversation. But the fact that they're taking their current thing that is unchanged from 5 years ago and saying we got to charge you $50 more for it, isn't something I think they look forward to doing. I don't think it's something that they were looking for an excuse to do. I don't know, but I'm going to guess that they're not going to be making more profit off of it because of this. They're going to be paying the tariffs and they're probably going to see their prices go or their sales go down because that $50 makes a difference on whether or not somebody wants to buy it. Like, it's going to affect their bottom line.
And my argument on this, the only argument I've gotten, I think it's valid, is that we've been talking for a year about how Rockstar wants to charge $100 for GTA 6. And that games across the board need to go up because development costs and blah, blah, blah. Like, I think this is something that the industry has wanted. to happen. But
that's a different That's a different thing than what we're talking about here, right? Because that's a market question. That's a are people willing to pay this price for this product based on its worth? And what we're talking about with the hardware increases is we had this product priced where we thought people would buy it based on its worth, and now we're increasing that price without any benefit to the consumer, right? Like, because of, again, an externality, because of something that they didn't have control of in there. To me, those are two distinctly different things. Of course, they want to charge more money for stuff because stuff is more expensive and inflation, everything else we talked about. You're absolutely right on that. We'll see what the Grand Theft Auto 5 or 6 price is when it launches. But Mario Kart being at $80 is evidence of that. Nintendo's doing fine. They have figured out that consumers are willing to pay that price, right? Like that's paid off for them. And again, there's a good argument you can make about that makes sense in inflation adjusted dollars and everything else. But that's a market question. That's a what do consumers value this at? And they're taking a risk in saying this is what we're going to price it at. That's a different thing than a government saying, okay, we're going to charge you this percentage more for all of these things you have been selling for 5 years. For no real reason other than like wanting to increase the taxes on that, which is policy reason. We can like the policy benefits of that and everything else is a whole separate discussion, obviously, but that's not something that Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo have any control over aside from where they produce these machines. And if they decide to bring all their manufacturing to the United States for systems they sell in the United States, it would cost $2,000, right? Like the price increase would be ginormous at that point because of the massive increase in cost of labor and parts and everything else that would come from making those things domestically. And so like there's not a practical way that they can avoid that cost. Whereas selling a game for more than it has been historically is something that's in their control. Like just to put a button on that, the two different kind of things we're talking about here. Absolutely, there's corporate greed. Absolutely, these companies are trying to make more money. Also, absolutely, there are production costs and all this stuff that kind of demands that they charge more. And there's inflation and everything. Like, there's all these other things that are happening. And to all of that, we have now stuck one more thing on top of that that doesn't connect with any of the other kind of market principles that they've been dealing with this whole time. And that, again, they could theoretically just eat that cost. But they have all these other things to concern themselves with. And if they chose to eat that cost, we'd see more layoffs, 100%, right? And we'll probably see more layoffs because, again, this is going to affect their bottom lines. I would guess, I don't know this for sure, I would love to see some market analysis on this, but I would guess the forecast of sales for the PlayStation 5 models is going to decrease because of this price increase.
And
probably
that was
not to a point to make up, especially not to a point to make up for the price difference in that Sony's going to have to pay those tariffs. Because of the
and that's what they said on the podcast that I really found interesting was they were like, look, this is not gonna have the sale, this is not going to help the PS5 specifically, that is already lagging behind where Sony wants it to be. The discussion that they essentially had is why would you do this? I mean, why because we just discussed why you would do it,
right?
But like the sentiment was that the Switch 2 is eventually gonna go up, right? But right now Nintendo is doing the smart thing and solidifying that user base and doing everything that they can do to hold off what's going to happen there. And if you are Sony with a five-year-old console, why would you not do everything you could do if you already know the sales for the PlayStation 5 aren't going to be where you would like them to be?
Sure.
Right.
And again, that's where I would say I don't think that they relished in doing this. But I would also say, like, if they're looking at either we could eat some of the costs now and we could increase these costs later, or we could just bite the bullet and do it now, probably wise business strategy to go, hey, our competitor right now having a big moment. Lots of people who are buying video game consoles are buying a Switch 2 right now. That's going to eat into our sales anyway because Nintendo's got a new product out. Let's do this now whenever we're not competing as directly. So when it comes time to compete more directly, that sting has worn off, right? Like, yeah. Rip the Band-Aid off now while the kid's looking at something else as opposed to while they're watching you rip off the Band-Aid. And I don't know that any of that thought process went into it, but that's just what I would think. That would be my counter-argument to that, is that if you got to do this, if you got to bite the bullet and raise prices, raise it while one of your competitors is out there with their new thing when you are out there with a five-year-old product. That's probably a good time to just get that adjustment in place. Because a year or 2 years from now, assuming tariffs stay the way they are, who in the world knows what's going to happen on that front? But assuming... Well,
and that's the thing with all of this. Like, I don't want to debate the policy right now because nobody knows yet whether the policy is or is not going to work or what the...
Nobody knows what the policy is, right? Like, that's the problem, is that there's just no... And that's what the companies are dealing with, is they just don't know either. There's just uncertainty around the whole thing. And so, like, they're just having to make assumptions and deal with that. And we'll see. Like, we'll look back in 2 or 3 years ago, okay, that's what happened. But it's just not a situation where they could build that into their planning. They've got to be reactive to it. And this is what we see whenever, like, a market has to be reactive.
And we don't really have time to talk about this, but I really feel like there are certain aspects of the how do I put this? I really feel like the morale of your user base is important, right? So, sure. So if you're right, which I think you are, in saying that believing that they would eat the cost of this is pie in the sky, I think you're 100% right. If that's the case, if I were the CEO of one of these companies, then what do you do for that user base that still says we appreciate you? Because one thing that I will mention, and one of the reasons that I love Valve even now is I believe in general Valve has customers in mind. We can talk about all the stuff that has been going on. We have talked about the right. Payment process and all that. I still think even with all of this, Valve has customers in mind. Yes, they want to make money, but they know where their bread is buttered. And I feel like it may be an illusion. It may not be real, but I feel like they care about their customer base. And if I were... a CEO of one of these companies, I'd be saying to myself, what can we do to let our customer bases know that we appreciate them and we're glad to have them? Because I don't feel a lot of that right now.
Yeah. I don't know. And of course, we want that from a company that they show that.
And like I said, Valve may all be in my head. They may be as corporate as everybody else.
The thing on Valve, let's see if the Steam Deck price goes up in the near future.
Of course, yeah.
And what's the difference? You know,
that's why I'm saying. It's probably in my head.
Which is, and it's not, because there is something to the fact of companies prioritizing that user base morale support thing, you know, like that's obviously a valuable thing. I think that is great until it's not. You know, it's one of those things that is so fickle and
ambiguous.
Like there's no formula for that. And so you could say, you know, like if they would just eat the price of the tariffs, like consumers would react to that in a really positive way. But I don't know that's the case. I don't know that people would say, yeah, but it still costs the same as it did 5 years ago. We're still kind of not happy about that. You know, like it, I don't know that you build that much goodwill. And again, if you're the CEO, you also have shareholders saying, you said this is how much money we're making this quarter. How are you making us this much money this quarter? Because if you don't make us this much money this quarter, your job's on the line. Everybody else's job's on the line. We're going to see mass firings across the, whatever, you know, like that's the, if all there was like a bucket of money and a person that was saying how the money gets into the bucket, like you could make those decisions a whole lot easier. Right. But that's not what it is. We're talking about stakeholders, like in the broadest sense of the term, stakeholders across the board, your user base, your shareholders, your corporate partners, your, if you're, you know, Microsoft, you've got your parent company looking over your shoulder and all this, like, it's just so many layers of stuff to try to keep everybody appeased that you're never going to do it, obviously. But like the customers are just one of those layers. We are not the be all end all. Like we have the power, but let's be honest, like as long as Microsoft is able to publish games that sell, they can justify a lot of things, you know, and obviously Microsoft hardware sales are in the ditch, like are terrible and everything else for other reasons that aren't this necessarily. But like, just to say, like, there are so many complicating factors that to say prioritizing customer experience overall for me as a customer is absolutely what I want.
Yeah.
But like, I'm also not jaded enough at this point, or am jaded enough, maybe is the way to say it, to know that's just not what is happening in these conversations. And it's not going to be. And
of course, it's always going to be complicated, because if you want to add something else on top of it, I heard somebody else talking about this the other day, and I think I posted it on the Discord. Like, if you want to get really, really, really complicated with it, There's a 16-year-old that made a game in Roblox that is going crazy and making so much money. It's one guy that took this kid like 3 days to build this game, and this gardening game in Roblox is going crazy. So you look at something like that and you go, okay, is all of this crap that we just talked about even relevant? Do we need all of this for a company to be successful, because a 16-year-old just did that?
Right. Of course. And that's, you know, that's the nature of the industry as well. And it's disruptive, and it's, you know, like a million different.
And I could make the same argument for Expedition 33. Whatever the next game from that company It's going to be $70, and I know that. But the fact that Expedition 33 is the game of the year in our eyes, and it's $50, and it's always on sale somewhere, like, it's the biggest game on the planet, and it's $50. Like, that you add that on top, like, is all of this stuff that we just talked about really necessary? I don't know. And I don't know that anybody else knows either.
Yeah, for sure. We'll find out, you know, like all these things we'll be able to look back on in 3 or 5 years ago. Oh, that's what happened. We won't, because we'll be dealing with whatever's happening in 3 to 5 years from now. But all that said, we talked about that way longer than we anticipated.
We always do.
We always do.
Yeah.
It should be a surprise, and it always is. That said, we do have a lot of games from Gamescom we wanted to touch on. So we will at least get through a handful of these really quickly here. Several of these, I mentioned we saw the Future Game Show. I just have to take a second to mention, it's nice to see David Hayter, right?
David Hayter, I love that dude.
I do too.
I love that dude.
That was a good time.
Their interaction was a little weird. Like, I thought it was a little strange between the two of them.
Yeah.
I that's one of the, you know, all of this stuff is scripted. Oh, but yeah. I was sitting there watching that going, did somebody really script that?
Yeah. Like, the other host was Maggie Robertson, who is Lady Dimitrescu, whatever, I can't say it, from Resident Evil. And you know, a million other things. But yeah, the interactions between them were at times wonky. And it's to be expected for these kinds of things, but it kind of is what it is. The future game show from Summer Game Fest, and now from here, just solid, just seems to be like really good games and everything else. And so that was kind of the big other event. You know, there wasn't all the different ones like there are during Summer Game Fest, but several. And so some of the games we saw there and a couple other places. Phantom Blade Zero, I wanted to bring this one up because I know you really dig this. It's Kung Fu Souls-like. Which I'll let you talk about.
Actually, I don't think it's Souls like, because I just watched the trailer and the dude was like, we don't want to do Souls like.
Right. It is and it isn't, kind of in the way that he describes it. It's weird how he talks about it. I mean, it very much is where you watch how it plays, like has that element to it. But like also, yeah,
I
try to do something a little bit different in that genre, maybe be a good way to say it.
And what it is it's in the same vein of Onimusha and Final Fight and all of those games that we love,
yes,
that we played when we were kids, and it's just amped up. And the thing that caught me on this is that apparently whoever this team is, and I wish I had more information, apparently this team got a bunch of martial arts masters in the mocap studio and had them do their thing. And so all of everything that you see apparently is motion captured by martial arts masters.
Yeah.
And I just watching a couple of minutes of it, like, I think it's somewhat obvious, like, it's pretty cool looking.
It's cool looking. It does look, it's not the thing about like a FromSoft Souls, like, to me, is that it always feels like kind of heavy. Right. Yeah. And so deliberate, and
this is quick.
This is very quick. And that feels different. And so I'm excited to play it because it just looks like it's fun to play. It does have that kind of Onimusha vibe to it. We were obviously pretty pumped about that. So we can hope it's good. Let's see here. What's a couple other ones? We saw Recur. This one looks cool. It's like playing with time. You're a postman. I don't really get the full premise of it. But like when you walk, it's like kind of 2D platformer. Makes me think of Braid. That came out several years ago now, which was like felt really revolutionary at the time, but like that ramped up a lot. But 2D side scrolling platformer that when you move right, time progresses forward. When you move left, time goes backwards, and you can kind of change things to make things happen differently. And like a cool mechanic that's not necessarily a new mechanic, but being used in a maybe a new way and in an interesting stylistic way. I'm really pumped about this game because it's very puzzle heavy. And you know, I'm a sucker for a good puzzle game. And so the whole kind of idea of it being this big puzzle thing looks super
fun. And it's really nice looking.
It is very pretty. Like it has a cool style to it, which is fun. A couple that we'd seen before, Dark Switch, which feels like Frostpunk, but in a tree.
Yep.
Looks so cool.
Frostpunk in a forest.
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yep, for sure. Well,
one thing I will say about this, it appears, and it may not be the case, but it appears that the entire thing is maybe possibly voiced, which I really like.
Yeah.
I not that I had a problem with Frostpunk, because Frostpunk is great. And I don't mind reading some text. I'm not to that point, but if this is fully voiced, I'm totally down with that.
Yeah. Deer and Boy, another one we saw before, that just looks really fun and kind of wholesome-y. It has a very like Limbo / Inside vibe to it, but not as dark. But that same kind of, again, 2D side scroller kind of thing, very puzzle heavy, all that. Maybe you're getting a sense of my game preferences through this. We saw the Summer Game Fest. It looked really cool. Wild Blue. This is what I'm really excited to talk about. This is very much inspired by Star Fox. They're not shy about that. They tell you that.
Yeah.
Straight up, it is kind of a modern reimagining of Star Fox, with modernized graphics. It's not the what was it called, the 3D effects, whatever thing that they had on the sticker on the Star Fox.
I'm gonna have to look that up because I don't remember. All I know is is that was the selling point of the Super Nintendo.
I'm looking at the game cartridge right now, and it was too small of an image to see. I could see the FX they got up. I'm trying to figure out. Anyway, it was a huge deal at the time when we were young, this game that had this 3D element to it in a way that, felt very new. What is it called? I can't even see it. Super FX, I think. Super FX. That's what it's called. Super Revolutionary Super FX Micro Trip creates special effects like never before, right on the cover. Mm-hmm.
And it did.
It was mind blowing at the time, and it looks very, very dated now. The art style of Star Fox has not held up, but the vibe of Star Fox, I love that game, and this captures that vibe, but in a new cell shaded cartoony kind of thing that just looks modern but looks like it plays a lot like Star Fox. Again, has this team with a fox leading it, with like I said, it's very much
and like you said, they say it out loud, so I hope
that, right, yeah.
I hope Nintendo doesn't get some crap because
Nintendo loves to sue. Nintendo loves to sue.
Yep.
I hope. I wonder, is it coming to Switch? That's an interesting question. If Nintendo's already signed off on this, I don't know what platforms it's coming to. I know it's on Steam. There it is. Let me see. Nah, I don't know. Maybe not. So anyway, looks great. It's just fabulous. I think the Cabbage posted it over on the Discord too. Looks super cool.
Yep.
So. We got to check that out. We got to check out Little Nightmares 3, which I wasn't aware was something I was going to want to check out. But when they were showing it, I was like, that looks really good.
It does. It looks so good.
And it's the co-op thing. I don't know if this is why Genevieve yet would be ready
She
would want to be.
Not.
It's Peggy 16, so.
I think this is probably a 14-plus kind of thing. I don't know. That would be awesome, but even I saw some stuff in there that's
it's pretty creepy.
Bro, which reminds me, I was trying to think of the name of the other game. The other game that is based off of the Little Nightmares franchise that I saw is Reanimal.
Oh, yeah,
That's the other one. And so, we have these two games that have some similarities. Obviously, there's some fans of Little Nightmares out there, and I'm really interested to see what happens with those two.
Yeah, for sure. And I hadn't been into them before. I'm kind of interested in them now. Discounty is a supermarket simulator. That's a very Stardew Valley kind of vibe to it. You're a part of this community, but you run this supermarket, but there's also other stuff happening and whatever. It looks pretty campy and wholesome, and maybe a nice little diversion from some of the other darker stuff that's out there, even though a lot of the other darker stuff looks pretty cool. Windstorm, you sent this one to me. The Legend of Kiyomori. I miss. I don't know if it was in the Future Game Show and I just didn't catch it, or if it was somewhere else or whatever.
I think it was one of those IGN Studio Interview things.
So it's set in 13th century Mongolia, which is already interesting because the games you get set in 13th century Mongolia. You are a courier, and so you're raising horses and then delivering stuff. And it has a very Death Stranding kind of vibe in that you're just like taking packages apparently from place to base against this big like sprawling landscape and everything else. But obviously without all the weird Kojima stuff, like right. the Timefall and everything else. But very, very pretty. And it captured me.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, that really looks cool.
Well, I mean, it's like I've always wondered why nobody has ever done a Pony Express game.
Yes.
Like that'd be really cool. And I am enthralled, just so Duff hears me say this, I'm enthralled by the idea of Death Stranding and the whole, you know, carry this from here to there. And I so want to dump 1,000 hours into Death Stranding. Yes. But I can see that when I get to the combat part of the thing, I'm going to fail. I'm not going to do well with the combat part of it. That really upsets me because I really am enthralled with the idea of Death Stranding and what it does. And it makes me wonder. I mean, we thought we had Lake a couple of years ago where you were a male person.
Yeah.
We've got like that's a thing that people want to do and just sort of. This is not going to be chill. There's going to be some battle. There's going to be some of that stuff. But, like, there's a lot to be said for walking through an environment or driving through a small town. Or yes. Like, I think I vibe with that kind of stuff. Like, you vibe with, like, Power Wash Simulator. Yeah. Like, it just feels good.
Yeah, we are kind of suckers for a good walking sim. Like, there's something about that that's if executed well, is a really fun gameplay mechanic that can be really rewarding, can be really narrative driven, can do a lot of
really and I really like. I really, really hope I'm wrong about Death Stranding because I really would like to get involved with that, but I watched the video talking about the combat and the building and all that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to get to a point where I just don't have the reflexes to do what it's going to require me to do. And that makes me angry.
That is fair.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I hear you. I'll mention one more here, and then we'll try to circle back around to some of these when they release. I just want to mention this one. Another one we saw before, but there's a good interview about. That's Keeper. It's the Double Fine game where you play as a lighthouse that sprouts legs and a little bird. And it's, again, even after watching the interview with Tim Schafer, which was
great.
Yeah, just fantastic. Love that. To hear him talk about the game and what Double Fine is doing with it, everything else, maybe even more excited and more confused about the game all at the same time. But just look cool.
I have a question to ask you that I know we don't have time to ask. So do you hear a baby over there?
I don't. So okay. Let's try.
Because he said something that I thought was very interesting in that interview, which was we're really happy to be a part of Microsoft.
Uh-huh. Like
we have resources that we didn't have before, and this is really, really, really cool. And I was surprised. Obviously, he's at Gamescom. Obviously, they pay for what he has to say. But I felt like he genuinely meant what he said, and I didn't expect that from Tim Schafer.
Yeah,
I was very surprised at that. He's very kooky. That whole studio's kooky.
Yes.
Like they got weird stuff going on. It looks like it'd be a great place to work. And it goes back to what we said earlier. Do you think that some of these studios are just better geared to work with the parent company? Like of all the companies out there, of all the studios out there that you could pick, I would not have said that Double Fine would have been like, oh yeah, Microsoft, we're all in on this. It's great. They've been great to us. Like I would have thought the exact opposite. And I was just really surprised by that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting idea of if there's certain kind of studio structures. Again, something specifically like Double Fine that has made a name for being weird.
Yeah.
Has had success in being weird, but also very obviously is kind of by definition a risky venture because they make weird stuff. A Walking Lighthouse game is weird.
A Walking Lighthouse game with no voice.
Right.
There's not going to be any text in this thing.
Yeah, it's.
I don't think
it's weird. And so, is there something to a company like that having the kind of support in both, like, backing in a kind of feeling like they can take risks thing, and financial backing in that if it fails, they're not like out of jobs. You know, right. Like,
yeah.
Double Fine would be one, even though, again, they're pretty established. We know who they are. You know, it's not some really random developer. But like, I could definitely see how they would find some comfort in that, you know, like how that would be a place where they would be able to say, we can take a risk because we know we've got some security, as opposed to we can take a risk because we know we got to make a splash and hope it works out, you know. And that's a good thing of kind of that big umbrella publisher model that eats up all these other developers under it. Like, if it works out that way, which oftentimes it doesn't, obviously, but when it works out that way, like, that's a good thing. I would make the argument more often than not, it goes the other way, that it gets to where when these developers that does something really cool gets bought out, they end up like softening the edges on everything and to make it more commercially viable, and then makes it watered down. But like, there's a place that it could work the other way, and hopefully this is one of those instances.
Well, and the reason that I bring it up is I've been thinking about this a lot the last couple of weeks, because we're a lot in that situation. We love making this content, and obviously there's a lot bigger podcasts out there, a lot bigger audiences than what we've got. They cover a lot of different games than what we cover. And what made me think of this question is, when it comes right down to it, we just want to make what we want to make, and it would be really nice if we had somebody that's like, here's a bucket of money.
Yes.
Go make what it is that you want to make. Like, we told you guys since the beginning, somebody comes to us and says, here's $1 million, we're going to sell out. Like, I hate to admit that, but we are. And because somebody's telling us, hey, we like what you're doing, and here's some money to keep doing what you do. There's a lot to be said for that. There's not that many Double Fines out there. There's not that many, and I can't remember the name of the studio, but there's not that many Dying Lights out there.
Yeah.
There's not that many of those that aren't Activision, that aren't Konami, that aren't, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting discussion.
Yeah, for sure. And I hope this game is successful. I hope Microsoft goes, hey, that was a good investment. You know, like,
yeah.
That's kind of where it is. So. Yeah. All that said, I do need to go get to this baby soon. So
yeah,
it's almost 2-year-old. He'll be 2 years old in just about 2 weeks, which is nuts.
Woo!
I stopped calling him a baby. He's barely a baby.
Yeah. All I can say is it's moving faster than it should move. And
yes,
we're going to have to hang on tight. That's all, yes, I have to say about that. But as he said, we got to get out of here. So I will tell you, please call the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
They are threatening to take it away from us again, and I have not called it yet. I will do that, but I also need you guys to call it, because they will take it away from us, and I will be very angry.
Yes.
So please call that number, 509-GAME-210. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. Join us over on the Discord. Of course, that link is over at the website that doesn't suck anymore. Yeah. So go grab that link because there's lots going on Discord. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
We don't know what we're doing for the next show. Could be more of this. Could be back to regular shows. Who knows?
Who knows?
But we will be back soon, and we appreciate you guys. For now, this has been Idiots Explaining Entertainment, and it's an extravaganza, and it's only on GamingUncensored.com. I'm Jamie, that's Tommy, and we are out. Is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.